So, I'm sure you all know this, but sometimes it's good to repeat the foundations of what it is that we're doing here. So the three foundations of Buddhism are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. We are a Sangha, and I would like to talk this evening about what it means to be a Sangha. The Buddha, of course, is the manifestation in human form that is a demonstration to us that any human being, all of us, can be liberated in this lifetime. The Dharma is the truth of what the Buddha taught, the reason that we need liberation and the way to become liberated, the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth being that everything is in flux, everything is unsteady. The second, that it creates a form of illness at ease, discomfort, or what in Pali is called dukkha, which is translated as pain. But the word actually refers to the axle in a wooden wheel of a cart. If it is not perfectly round, then your ride is not very smooth. So dukkha means that we are riding this ever-changing world, and because it's not a smooth ride, we're uncomfortable. The third truth is, what is it about this uneven ride that makes us uncomfortable? That we want it to be a certain way. We want a certain quality of comfort. And somehow or other, even in those times when we get the perfect moment, when everything feels just right, the next moment it shifts. So we're always in a state of contraction, planning, strategizing how to have it be just right for a little longer or for some time in the future. And the fourth, of course, is the path to liberation. So that's the Dharma in 3 minutes. And now the Sangha, which is the third foot of Buddhism, and generally the foundation that is paid least attention to. Now, when Andrea was introducing me and making the announcements, she very skillfully emphasized how wonderful it is to be sitting with each other. What an extraordinary opportunity it is to be supported by everybody being here together doing the same thing. And that's generally what people say is the most precious thing about Sangha, the support that the group gives you for getting in touch with what is really going on, when our minds get quiet and we get in touch with our bodies, and the internal agitation that results in our attempt to try to keep things the way that we want them to be. But I, every time that I sit with a group, notice this ineffable, incredible pull, this stillness, this profound influence that happens because of sitting with a group, whether I'm up here or part of you regular guys, it's always deeply affecting me. And I never quite understood what it was that created that experience. A few days ago, I was listening to the radio, National Public Radio, and a natural scientist was being interviewed about research that he was doing on birds and fish. And as I was listening to him talk about his project, it just clicked, well, that's kind of like a sangha. His research had to do with the experience, the demonstration, that when a single fish has to get from point A to point B, it doesn't get there. But when it is in a group of fish, that group gets to where they're going. Either they're going towards nourishment or they're going away from danger. And he noticed that this was the same with birds. Birds of a feather flock together. If a bird needs to go from point A to point B alone, doesn't quite get there. But in a flock, the flock has a steady pattern that holds together, and they get where it is they're going, no matter how far it is. And it was very, very intriguing listening to the radio, hearing the announcer say, how do you explain that? And the scientist said, the only explanation is that they plug into something that I call big mind. So a mind that is larger than the calculations inside of each of the brains of the individual birds or the individual fish. And I thought, maybe that's what we do here. That's why we get from point A to point B, however you identify those points, from the first ring of the bell to the last ring of the bell, or from all the chaos that we come in with to a point where we really touch what's called Tathagatagarbha in Tibetan, the ground of our being. And when we touch the ground of our being, we touch the ground of all being. So maybe part of what feels so compelling and draws us here every week is this acknowledgement, this precious taste of plugging in to big mind and the facility that it gives us for arriving at a certain state of calmness and clarity and steadiness, even if what we're mindful of is our distress. So the quality of big mind, of a mind that goes beyond our individual brains, is something that even neurologists are discovering. They are talking about how our brains operate in order to connect. We are wired to connect. We're wired to be empathic with each other. We're wired to experience another person's immediate subjective reality. We're wired to respond as a group, even though we're very, very conditioned to be persons and individuals and think of ourselves as unique. And maybe this wiring is actually survival supportive, just as it is in fish and in birds. But because we have complex discursive minds, the benefit of being humans, questionable benefit of being humans, we don't really tap into it very easily. It takes the effort of a Buddha 2,500 years ago to go into intensive sitting, the effort of building a sangha, of encouraging people, supporting, providing instructions to get us into a place where we can actually convene the way that fish and birds naturally do. So all of a sudden, as I was listening to this report on the radio, it made sense to me why the Sangha is such an important part of Buddhism and is identified as one of the three jewels, not to be relegated to the side, but to be really, really seen as precious. So every time that we convene here, we are participating in the preciousness of big mind. And it does gather us into a deeper awareness. And it's the reason that you come here every week, if you do. Does that make sense? Do you experience that? Is that recognizable as something that you might? Yes. So it was really striking for me. It was the first time that I really understood why Sangha is so precious. It's true that it's very, very supportive to practice with like-minded people. It does keep us in our posture, in our position, for the duration of the time. But aside from the disciplinary aspect of it, it also gives us the opportunity to tap into something that liberates us from the confinement, the imprisonment of feeling that we're unique and alone and separate, which is truly one of the great outcomes, one of the great hungers that people feel, is to feel connected. Difficult to do when we're trapped in what Howie calls the gravitational pull of self, the concept, the illusion of self. So every time that we come into this room and practice, we liberate ourselves from that illusion, even though it might be difficult at times to stay with it. So I was just wondering how we can expand this experience. Since we're not monks, we're not all wearing saffron-colored robes, we don't walk down the village streets begging every morning and then go and chant before our last meal at 10 o'clock. How can we broadcast this sense of participating in big mind when we're out there in the world? Maybe it's just by touching into that place in us that is present. Just very, very simply, even if we're driving a car, in the middle of a traffic jam, in conversation over the phone, emailing someone, just spontaneously remembering to connect. Not a serious practice, just a moment or two of reconnecting with that in us. How many individuals, thousands, possibly millions, on this planet or elsewhere, might be doing the same thing at that very moment? We don't know, but it's very, very possible. Even as we sit here right now this evening, there's probably people on retreat, on many retreats around the world. And if we drop into that present moment of awareness, we might be able to participate in that big mind experience with them. Broadcast it by being in it even when we're just with ourselves. I think it's palpable. I think you can feel it in the space, in this room. And it makes for what I call innocence, which is also something that people experience when they sit together, the innocence of being fresh again, fresh mind, open heart, soft heart. And we long for that feeling. Because in a way, instinctively, we know that that is the true essence of who we really are. And it gets pushed and pulled in a lot of directions that disfigure us inside and out, making us different from that core bodhicitta that is the essence of who we all are. bodhicitta, the compassion that arises from an open heart and a calm mind. I like to think that bodhicitta is actually the portal into big mind, where we don't see ourselves as separate, but are actually identified with all living beings, not just human beings, animals, plants, the earth itself. It's an extraordinary relief to be able to drop in and expand in big mind. So it was quite a surprise to hear those two words on the radio. But I know that we are attracted to the experience, because otherwise we wouldn't be here. So from that place that we have shared, I invite you to ask questions or share your insights, your liberation. Yes.
Just a comment. A long time ago, I lived in Japan for a while, and that's a very big mind culture.
I mean, yes.
Using your terms, and it was very interesting when I arrived, and I had never lived in a culture like that before. I kind of felt like a fool a lot of the time. I felt really out of sync with everybody and with the people around me and with the community around me. And I think after living here for a while, you kind of get that. It's like I always thought of it as like a radio frequency that eventually you kind of tune into when you're immersed in it long enough. And I think the closest thing I could think of it here is, you know, if you meet somebody and you're gay and you're like, are you gay? You know, there's like a sort of an unspoken channel there that people tune into, or whatever, you're Jewish and they're Jewish, and you kind of like have this different connection with them that's sort of unspoken. And I think, and because you brought this up tonight and thinking about it tonight, I feel like here, this is probably one of the only places I felt that here.
Oh.
I think at the end of the night when we offer away, you know, the benefit that we've had here, when we offer it out, it literally kind of feels like sun rays, you know?
Yes.
Trying to put out, and I mean, but it's conscious, though. I have to think about it.
It's intentional. Mm-hmm. You put the intention out. Yeah.
But it's not demanded of the culture. Like, I think for the most part, I forget about it.
Yes, it's true. In the West, we are much more individual than in Asia, where, especially a place like Japan, which is so small, people really do have to always be aware and move and flow together instead of elbowing, right? Yeah, it's a different way of moving. But it's... Thank you. Yeah. But the thing is that it actually... I think my main point is that it actually eases people into the experience that we all come here to get. It gets us where we want to go, just like it gets those birds to the South Pole. You know, if they were individual, they couldn't navigate. But because they're in a group, they somehow have a larger frame to refer to that gets them to their outcome. Our outcome here being slowing down, connecting, steadying ourselves into what is fully present in our minds and bodies. And we're all facilitating that with each other as a group. That's what I mean by big mind. But yeah, socially, it helps too. And Japan, it coordinates itself, organizes itself very well like that. And thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so my experience, and most people will say that when they meditate alone, it's a little bit more of a struggle. There's a little bit more distraction. You know, you might remember that you've got a bunch of things that you really need to do and there's an urgency, or you're more easily pulled away. But I'm thinking of all the efforts that people make when they're trying to meditate, say, in their home. They have a meditation place, and very often it's got candles and all the different sacred objects, and also photographs of different sacred people. And so I think that's a way in which they try to simulate the support and the feeling of sitting in Big Mind, even though you're sitting alone, because of all the images that you have around you. I don't think that it's as easily accessible. And I think that that's what the support is of coming into group. Yeah.
Hi, I want to say that I heard Thomas Science Friday.
Yes. Was interesting, wasn't it?
You can look it up online.
Okay, it's fine.
But I wanted to say that I did not make the connection between Big Mind and meditation. And you've answered the question I've had since I started meditating. Why is it easier in a group?
Yes. Yes, exactly, exactly, exactly. Thank you. Now, that's true. I've often wondered, you know, why does it feel so different? It's just that there's a magnetic vibrancy about sitting in a group and that I can't really explain until I heard that program about the birds and the fishes. Yeah, that's right. It's Science Friday on NPR, and you can... Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, Ira Flatow, that Buddha. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I know that I've heard other studies where they talk about in human nature we have this fear of missing out, and missing out on something that we're, you know, when we're not there. So maybe it turns off that part inside of us that feels like we're missing out, because it settles us.
We're all here.
So this is what we're supposed to be doing. We're not missing out. This is where we are.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. It comes with the idea that there's something wrong with us. You know, we're always persistently wondering, what is wrong with us? You know, what do I need to perfect in myself? You know, why am I not part of the whole? Missing out, to me, is a version of feeling... not disconnected, not connected. And when we sit in a group and experience, you know, what now we can call, you know, Big Mind, it gives us that relaxation that we are together, we're included, we're connected without having our smartphones in our hands, which, you know, is a replica of our desperation for that all of the time. I mean, walking around, people are texting crossing the street. I can't believe it, you know. They're taking their life in their hands to feel connected through technology. But yes, so, yeah. Our longing for being interconnected is an extraordinary thing because we are. So we are all interconnected. I was listening to Howie's talk that he gave last week, pleading to become more mindful of what is going on with the climate conditions on this planet. And when, you know, when we realize that we cannot thrive, not just us, but our children and our grandchildren and all everything that lives on this planet cannot thrive without being in balance with everything else. But we somehow just can't get clear on that so that it settles in and becomes a known truth that we don't have to remember, be reminded of continually. And what's interesting about it is that that feeling of disconnectedness, though it's an illusion, it is also our primary source of suffering. And it's not true. How could we have found ourselves in this conundrum, being such a smart species. The other thing about big mind is that we're not just isolated with our own brain power. We can actually have all of the networks operating on every level of this universe, operating within us and through us as well. So, you know, we can go from brilliant to genius if we just allow ourselves to participate in that. Whenever anybody comes up with a brilliant idea, very, very often people around will say, I had that idea, I thought of that, you know. We're so individualistically oriented, and it's been a source of some of our success, but a lot of our psychological and spiritual suffering. So I feel that that is really what we plug into when we come here. We plug into the interconnectedness. It's undeniable. If somebody is coughing, we feel it. It reverberates. Whenever everybody is in the deep state of concentration, we can feel it. It's like the air is magnetized. It supports us. We're not separate from it. So that might be part of what the insight was, the wisdom of including the Sangha as one of the three jewels of Buddhism. Understanding that when people practice together, that's what happens. We go beyond ourselves while we go deeper into ourselves simultaneously. And it's such a relief to know that we can have those two experiences together. Does that resonate with you? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can I offer an alternative viewpoint?
Sure.
So this is just my experience. I think when you're in big mind, I think it's the same big mind whether you're meditating alone or with people. To me, I don't see the difference in big mind between one and the other. And also, I would say that connectedness actually speaks to a different kind of connectedness than noticing that you're sharing a physical space with other people.
And it's another connectedness than noticing that you're in a physical space? Yes, I agree. It's not just that you're in the physical space, but being in that physical space actually, there's a gravity about it, a gravity of presence about it. But I understand that you connect to big mind, and one can connect to big mind meditating alone. I feel that there's a little more of a challenge there, at least in my experience. But certainly, big mind is everywhere, so it can be connected with at any time and on all occasions. Yeah? I'm not here to support the existence of big mind. Just, yeah. Amplified. Okay. That's a good word for it. Are you a musician?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's amplified. Yeah. 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 There's something, it's close to ecstatic, right, when you lose yourself. But in a way, you can't say mindfulness. Practicing mindfulness, you lose yourself because you really are present. But the concept of self seems to disperse. And that's a great relief. And also possibly why one can access the experience and have the attributes of big mind. Yeah. Amplified. Thank you. Good word for it. I don't know why I wanted to focus on Sangha this evening. You know, we live in a world that's, you know, connectivity is the phrase, is the word that drives everything. I've worked at Google doing a course on mindfulness and emotional intelligence for the past 6 years. And connectivity is just the bottom line for everybody. And I know that it's important to manifest things that are possible for us in material form. We seem to want to produce our neurology in physical form. But it seems to track our awareness and our insight away from the immediacy that we all can have access to it just by being ourselves more fully, more completely. We can experience interconnectivity without just having it as a spiritual idea. And it is a great relief. Or even having technology. So it's 9 o'clock. Let's just sit for a few minutes and see if we can plug into Big Mind.